This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Hey, good Thursday to you. Thanks for joining us, Sports Map Radio, and it is a throwback Thursday today. We've got that coming up for you, and we'll have some fun with the music of the era of which we're talking about. If you're not familiar with what we do on Throwback Thursday, usually something in history and sports, but we don't always do that. Sometimes if it's very, very irrelevant, very relevant or something we want to talk about, we'll throw it in there. Like, for example, if it was yesterday, if we had a throwback Wednesday, we would have talked about Miracle on Ice and Lake Placid in 1980. But we got one today that I think is rather interesting. So we've got that for you coming up. Last night, I was buckled in to watch South Carolina take on Alabama. Now, South Carolina, my school, is not a very good basketball team this year. It's the first year with Lamont Paris, who came in from Chattanooga, replaced Frank Martin, who had taken the Gamecocks to a Final Four a number of years ago and did a very good job. But over the last couple of years, South Carolina just hasn't been able to catch a groove when it comes to basketball. And Lamont Paris is a good up-and-coming young coach, but this is the first year he's struggling, and the Gamecocks aren't a very good basketball team. And Alabama is the number two team in the nation and was the number one team in the nation at one point, and they have superstar Brandon Miller, who's been in the news lately. So I was interested in this game not because South Carolina was playing Alabama, although, you know, I mean, I'm interested in whenever my school takes on a top team just to see if they could get an upset, but I also wanted to see Brandon Miller and how people are going to react to the first game since news came out that we talked about yesterday of him being involved in a way, not a direct way, but a way in that fatal shooting in January on just outside the campus in Tuscaloosa. And I got what I thought was going to happen. Every time Miller touched the ball, he was booed. Every time he touched the ball, somebody was chanting something. At one point, this student body was chanting, "Lock him up, lock him up." And he went on to score 41 points. And he had the game-winning shot at the end of regulation, scoring with 0.8 seconds remaining, that led Alabama to escape with a two-point victory over South Carolina. A absolutely thrilling, fun basketball game to watch my school that's not very good at basketball almost pull the upset. I was really hoping, because when you have a season where it doesn't go your way, right? Sometimes you have bad seasons in sports. You want one or two things that you can sort of hang your hat on. South Carolina football, for example, had been kind of back and forth with some wins and losses, but then poured it on late where they picked up a huge win against Tennessee at home and then went on the road to beat Clemson. And those were two just stellar wins for Shane Beamer. And as a fan, those are the ones I point to, not necessarily bad losses or, you know, games in which they struggled. You hang your hat on a couple of moments during the season. I think we all do that when we have teams that where seasons aren't going their way. For South Carolina, this would have been a huge win. It would have meant nothing to Alabama. Alabama is likely to be a number one seed on the board. I don't think it would have changed anybody's opinion. You're allowed to lose a few games in college basketball, and you're allowed to lose a few games in college basketball when you're kind of surrounding by a controversy, and Alabama's certainly got one now with Nate Oates making his comments and just the situation overall as more and more scrutiny is going to be on the program for how it handled the Brandon Miller situation. But it was still a really fun basketball game to watch and to watch Miller play. Now, there's going to be two sides to this. On the one hand, I was wondering if Nate Oates in Alabama did a good thing for Brandon Miller by playing him in that game. Now, look, Alabama is a number two team in the nation. They didn't need to win last night. They could have lost even to a bad South Carolina team. It happens, and no one's expecting you to go undefeated in college basketball, and you're allowed to lose a game or two. That's the way it is. But the reality of it is that every time he had the ball, he heard it, and every time that he was on the court, there were the chants, again, lock him up, lock him up. I mean, fans can be brutal. College fans in particular, college students in particular, can be very, very brutal. But he handled it really well. He handled it more than really well. He handled it exceptionally well. He scored almost every time he had the ball. He was able to do, you know, just ate up the South Carolina defense when he was on the court. But I don't think in the end that this story is turning out to be just a simple, again, as Nate Oates put it, wrong place at the wrong time, as he badly put it. There's more to this, and I think the more scrutiny that's going to be on this, the more it's going to be realized that maybe Alabama didn't do enough on this. Now, on the one hand, should they have suspended Brandon Miller for just being associated with this situation, for just being around this situation? Well, that's not fair to the player, because if the circumstances around this really are as innocent as they're portraying it out to be, meaning that he drove a car that had a gun. He said he never touched the gun. He didn't physically hand it. He said he reached in to get the gun. It was for defensive purposes. He thought it was a friend defending himself or trying to defend himself. Whatever that is, then if Alabama looks into it and realizes that's the case, then they don't owe him a suspension, because a suspension can be pretty problematic. I remember years ago we were talking about this with Tom Brady and Deflategate, right, where Brady was, the NFL wanted to suspend him 4 games, and Brady kept fighting it and fighting it and fighting it. And people started thinking, well, why are you putting this in the courts? It seems so stupid. It's ridiculous. The courts have other things to do, and this is a silly NFL argument. But I remember saying at the time, I was like, wait, though, we have a tendency to really simplify things. And if Tom Brady, and then I ended up being wrong in Tom Brady's case, if Tom Brady serves any suspension for this, it gives ammunition for people to stain him as a cheater in his legacy. Because in the end, people won't remember the fight and the battle, and they won't even remember the details of why he was suspended in the first place. They will just see that he sat out 4 games in a particular year because of what happened prior in a circumstance in which he was accused of deflating footballs on purpose, right? In this case with Brandon Miller, I think Alabama had to be really careful. And I don't know what the right answer is, because I don't know all the details. It seems like there's more details that are coming out. But if you're Alabama and you say, look, we got a really tragic situation here, and there's a woman who had a 5-year-old son who lost her life, and my players are involved in it, and I've already taken care of Darius Miles, meaning he's off the team, and now I'm looking at other players that may have been involved, and one involves my mega superstar, my NBA superstar. Now, I need him if I want to win a national championship, but I also don't want to suspend him if he is innocent of what is being talked about or what the investigators are finding out about him. If he is innocent, because that'll stain him, and I don't want to stain him. I don't want NBA teams to look at him and see that, yeah, for a period of time he was suspended while they were looking into a murder. If indeed all he did was provide a gun that he didn't own to a friend who owned it, who said he was needing it for defense, to defend himself. Now, again, more details are popping up, and this is getting a little bit more cloudy. And in fact, coming up in the next hour, we're going to get into more details about it. But the reality of it is, watching last night, I saw a basketball player with tremendous, tremendous skill overcome an adversarial moment on the court, where fans were reacting to the news that he was involved in something pretty horrific. But again, the answer is really hard, because you want Alabama to do something on this, right? I mean, it wasn't something where we're involved in these silly college rules, right? Like he got a free meal, or he got cash, or, you know, the things in the old days that used to get you in trouble that we used to think were big, big, big deals involving FBI wiretaps, for crying out loud, right? We're not talking about that. We're talking about real world situation, not phony rules that the NCAA made up, real life rules that we all live by. And I think that's where people are wondering, where was any level of responsibility on Alabama's part to do its due diligence in this situation? To just say, for example, that, well, there are no charges that are being filed, just allowed Nate Oates to go, well, then that suits it for me. I'm fine with it. If they're not going to charge him with anything, well, whatever. But as we know, sometimes just because there's no charges that are being filed, it doesn't mean that somebody is innocent. It just means there's not enough evidence to charge them. So you got to do something extra if you're a coach, because it's your program. Again, you're not asking the law to do it for you. You're asking yourself to do it for you. And I think that's where it becomes really tricky. Does Nate Oates want to say You know what? I know he's not being charged with a crime. I know he's not a suspect in this case. I know he dropped off, he drove a car to his friend who reached into the car to get his own weapon, and Brandon Miller did not touch that weapon based on testimony of everyone who was around at the time, including Miller and Darius Miles. But I have an obligation to set some level of standard here at this school that in certain circumstances like this, I'm going to act and say, you know what? You're going to sit out a couple of games until we really, really figure out what happened. It makes Nate Oates look like in the end, he just wanted his star player on the court by any means, by any explanation. And it was good enough for him that there were no charges that were going to be filed. But on the flip side, there's an argument to be made that by suspending him, you damage him if he didn't even do anything wrong. And that's where Nate Oates is being held to the fire a little bit. Because he didn't suspend him, he protected Brandon Miller's sort of image in a way. Because he was saying, look, there's nothing to see here, right? Before this report came out, remember this happened in early January and he started every game since. He did not get ahead of the story to say, I'm suspending my star player until I can figure this out, because he didn't directly attach the name to the incident when no one was making the attachment. Again, as a Gamecock fan, I was watching it to see if the Gamecocks could pull off a monumental upset. But as a sports commentator, I was looking in to see how this young man was dealing with the adversity of the new news that was coming out of him being somewhat involved in this and how fans would react to it.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It's 1985 on a Throwback Thursday today. So will we have a lot of one-hit wonders? I always ask you when we do things in the mid-80s. I always feel like it was an era of one-hit wonders.
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few right now.
Yeah, but we also got some artists that had a sense of longevity in the 80s.
I mean, it's going to be a mixture of both.
Yeah, but on this date, February 23rd, 1985, Bobby Knight threw a chair across Assembly Hall in a game with the Indiana Hoosiers and the Purdue Boilermakers. And Bobby Knight, known for his fiery temper, took it out on a poor old chair. he just got away with stuff like that.
It's such an iconic image in college basketball.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. He was such a brilliant coach.
He really was.
But he was tagged with this forever and ever. It just, the temper tantrums that he had were legendary. So much so John Feinstein wrote a whole book on it, Season on the Brink. But he's such a brilliant, brilliant coach. And listen, he doesn't get a lot of credit for things he did good, because some of the things that he did bad are pretty terrible. Choking Neil Reed, ended his Indiana career.
I mean, our image of Bobby Knight, whenever we mention Bobby Knight, we always think about that fiery attitude.
Yep.
And we think about him tossing this chair across the court.
I mean,
we can all see it just like skipping and bouncing all right. You know, I mean, forget about cutting down the nets or what else positive things can we think of?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, he did one thing that a lot of coaches that he got a lot of people would say this about him. He made sure his kids graduated. Like back in the day when you would stay 4 years, he made sure you graduated. He made sure you went to class. He had no tolerance for any student. He was an Army guy. I mean, he had no tolerance for students not attending class, skipping class, not doing well on grades. So he had a very high graduation rate. But here is the problem. That old line, what was it? Power corrupts absolute. Power corrupts absolutely. He was the king of Indiana. And you could get away with anything. He could get away with anything. And everyone looked away because he was powerful. He was really, really powerful. And I remember there was the documentary that the 30 for 30, The Dark Days of Night, I think it was called. And it went on to talked about the Neil Reed choking incident. And there was a woman who she was talking of. There was something about where somebody wanted to speak about Bobby Knight's treatment. But he owned an insurance company. And he was afraid to say anything because he knew that Bobby Knight could say one word and nobody would buy insurance from him. His career would be over and he'd have to move. Like he had that sort of power. He was more powerful than the governor, right? I mean, he could just get away with stuff. And then he would do this kind of thing and everyone would just look the other way. And now you can't. Like, you throw a chair, forget it. You're suspended. The schools are not going to tolerate that. And even when he choked Neil Reed, He like grabbed him by the throat, right? Grabbed him by the throat in a practice. When they didn't have video on it, everyone was afraid to say what happened. Nobody wanted to speak up. And then they finally found video of it and they went, okay, we got to do something about this. But then Knight was on suspension, right? And then Knight was on suspension. And then he comes back and they tell him, you got to be on perfect behavior. Like, you have to be on perfect behavior. And somebody says something, Norman Campbell's like called him Knight instead of Coach Knight or Mr. Knight. And he lost his mind on a student, and that was it. And then he went to Texas Tech, and he did good things at Texas Tech. So he's had a lot. I mean, he's had a lot of success on the basketball court, but he also had a lot of problems. He was a very, very wound up guy, man. I used to to have that level of passion and temper constantly. Even as you get older, you sort of mellow out a little bit. You realize there's a big picture going on. When you're young and you're fighting for things, you can blow up. But as you get older, you tend to see he never did. He never did. It was the same fiery, fiery Bobby Knight. That was always the case, constantly. But the chair image, you're 100% correct. 100% correct. It's one of the images when people think of Bob Knight, that's the one image that they have of him throwing a chair.
Yeah,
if you've never...
I can't picture him cutting down a net. I know he did.
Yeah. 1987, I remember he won the championship with Steve Alford. Now, yeah. Steve Alford was Mr. Indiana. So, as I've said many, many times, when I grew up, my father got Sports Illustrated, and I used to gobble Sports Illustrated up. I'd read it cover to cover. And I remember reading about Steve Alford, right? This Indiana wonder kid, you know, just not only Mr. Basketball, like 80s famous as you could be famous without social media. Like, that was Steve Alford. Like, Damon Bailey was a young kid who got really famous because Knight said something about it. But Steve Alford, when he was Mr. Basketball, was a big deal. Like, he would, his school would go to places and it would sell out. People go nuts lining up just to see him play. He was that good. He was a sharp shooting kid. So naturally, he went to play for Indiana and they couldn't stand each other. I mean, he could, when Alford got into coaching, him and Bobby Knight still couldn't stand each other. And they won a national championship together. You would think everything would be rosy, but it never was rosy. You'd think when you win a title, you sort of put things aside. No.
Especially your star player.
Yeah, especially your star player. No, ain't going to do that. Beat Syracuse with Keith Smart on the baseline jumper at the Superdome. Crazy. So that's 1985. So you hear some good music, some interesting music, different styles of the 80s. Like I said, every time you do this, I think about being at a school dance, waiting to ask Danielle Bonner if she wants to dance.
Well,
that's every time you take me to 85.
Be prepared.
Yeah, that'll be good. So, as I said at the top of the hour, I love watching an unexpected college basketball game, like an unexpected thing with my team. And got so caught up into that last night. I mean, I was actually yelling. I was really excited. South Carolina would come down and score. Alabama would go down and miss. Alabama would, South Carolina would have the ball again. They had a lead, protecting the lead. Then they'd miss a shot. Then Brandon Miller would come down and score. But it, like I said at the top of the hour, it really was really fascinating to watch that kid go out there under that scrutiny. I mean, he didn't let it bother him one bit. If he did, he didn't show. If it did bother him, he absolutely didn't show it. He poured in 41 points. He was a dominating player. South Carolina had nothing. I mean, he would just drive the lane. Nobody did anything. Nobody could do anything. He would just drive the lane, go to the hoop. No matter how they would put an arm up around him, he found a way to the basket. He always did. But it was one of those games where I was just hanging on to this could be the season. Like, this could make my season. I don't care what happens. They stink. They're lousy. It's a first year. They're going to hit the transfer portal hard next year. That was the plan from the beginning. So I knew this was a bad season. But this could be it. This could be the one thing I remember, beating number 2 Alabama, the best team in the SEC, and take them down. Eh, Yeah, it didn't quite happen that way. So, but it was fun to watch it go into overtime. So it's funny because the broadcasters, like the game, South Carolina, they missed a shot that in a tie game. So they had the ball and they missed the shot and went into overtime. And the announcers do that announcer thing when you're in a good game and it goes into overtime. They go, hey, we'll be buckled up for the next 5 minutes, right? Yeah, yeah, we can't wait. And I'm like, no, I know what's going to happen here. I just anticipated Alabama just going, okay, that's enough. Let's be done with this.
We had our fun.
Yeah, we had our fun. And it's one of those overtime games where you see it like 91-78 overtime. Yeah. And you're like, how is that game in overtime? It's a 12-13-point win. And you see the box score, and it's like 17-3 in the overtime period, something like that. That's what I thought was going to happen. I thought Nate Oates in Alabama was like, we're done with this. Let's get out of here. Let's just pour it on, kids. Let's move on. But the Gamecocks hung in there. And they hung in there, right? They kept answering baskets, basket after basket. But it was fun to watch. But the larger story is this Brandon Miller thing. And I, as I said at the top of the hour, man, I don't know what Nate – people are scrutinizing Nate Oates last night for playing him.
Yeah.
It's a road game. It's not in the comforts of your own home. But what message would have been sent if he had sat him?
Truth of the matter is that it's a fine line right now,
right?
And you know, Nate Oates is, I think you know, it's a double edged sword for him. I mean, you can do the one thing where it's like, all right, you know, let's suspend him until we have all the facts, or you know, let's play him until we have all the facts.
That's exactly right. What's as a coach, you don't seem to win either way, right?
No, you're not. He's not. No matter what he decides. I mean, hopefully Alabama has his back and just saying, yeah, you know, we're investigating this. We support you and what your decisions are. Because I mean, it's the decision. It's impossible. You're in the hunt. You're trying to maintain a number one seed. You're trying to win the SEC, championship. The tournament's coming up soon. You want to have all March Madness is coming up. You want to be in that rhythm.
Yeah,
want to disrupt that rhythm.
They talked about this last night on the broadcast. You can be ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, but you also, that's because you're playing your division conference well. Mm-hmm. Are you national championship good? This is a very good team. This is a national championship team. They could win the national championship because they have one of the best players in college basketball. But you're 100% right. It's if you do it, you're going to get scrutinized. And if you don't do it, you're going to get scrutinized. It's a no-win situation for him. Maybe the best decision where he can't win either way is to just play him and win basketball games and see what happens down the road.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This is Murray Head, One Night in Bangkok. This is from the play Chess. I don't know how I know this.
The play?
The play. It's a Broadway play. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, but this
is
a big hit.
Do they go to Bangkok in this play?
I have no idea. I've never seen Chess, but I think they do.
And you're saying Chess like the game Chess, right?
Yeah, the game Chess. The play is called Chess.
Okay.
I have this on my playlist, on my phone, bunch of songs. I bought it like an 80s pack, and it's so when I exercise, it pops up every now and then. It's a good little tune, but I never... God, I was a kid. I didn't really understand the meaning.
I still don't understand it.
I know.
What are you talking about as a kid?
Maybe I have to see Chess in order to understand the context of
well,
the song.
Well, I mean, having watched Hangover 2,
yeah.
You know, there's a line in that movie that always cracks me up. And I don't remember who, I think it was Paul Giamatti's character said it. You know, when they couldn't find their friend, he's like, he belongs to Bangkok now.
Yeah, right.
So maybe that's what this song means.
That's right. So it's 1985 on a Throwback Thursday today. Bobby Knight throws a chair at Assembly Hall in Indiana. He made a joke about it on David Letterman one time that he was looking for his coat. Nobody could find a coat. He tried to find a trainer, couldn't throw a trainer. The only thing that he had was a chair. So, yeah, try to make a joke about it. But Bobby Knight had a fiery temper, that's for sure. Mike Krzyzewski was asked if he missed coaching. He said no. I knew he was going to say that.
Of course, yeah.
If you admitted that you missed it, it's going to make people go, oh, well, why'd you leave in the first place?
Not only that, but I would assume he would get inundated with offers.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then he doesn't want that. He wants to, no matter what it is, like maybe me, him and his wife are in the corner. Like he goes, man, I really wish I didn't leave basketball. But they'll never admit that publicly. They all say they made the right decision. They all do. But here's the thing. We speculated on it. I know everybody else sort of speculated on it, but I remember we talked about it. Was these decisions like Jay Wright, Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams,
yep,
based on the ever-changing world of college athletics where they're like, I ain't messing with this. I don't want to get involved in this. This is not the way I want to do it. This is not the way I want to – I don't want to mess with this at all.
100%.
Right?
It has to – I'm 100% because – these guys don't want to – these guys, they're set in their ways. They like the way they're recruiting in the past, and all of a sudden they – it's not them recruiting the best player saying, hey, come to the best program.
Yeah, Mike Krzyzewski had to make a transition from a period of time where it was Johnny Dawkins and Mark Allery and Danny Ferry and Christian Laettner and Bobby Hurley and Grant Hill, guys that stayed 3 to 4 years, right? If you left early, it was like your junior year, right? It was never like your freshman year,
and he was
right?
famous for not having the one and done.
And he had a period of time where Duke players stayed all the way through. Again, you usually get 3 or 4 years out of them. Then he had to make the transition to the Kyrie Irvings and the Zion Williamsons. Mm-hmm. And like he had to switch that. And then with NIL and now players getting their deals and players negotiating deals and going to schools with the best NIL opportunities and then maybe transferring if they didn't like the soup on a Tuesday, he probably went, no, thank you. I'm done. I'm out of here. No, thanks. I'm not fighting this battle. I'm not going to sit in a 17-year-old's house with his parents and not be the boss of the situation. That's not happening.
Well, and you see the writing on the wall, too, right? I mean, what does Riley Durham have, going for him there? Because, I mean, really, it's NIL. I mean, there's a lot of national NIL going on, but eventually it's going to be very regional.
Very regional.
It'll be very local. How is he going to compete with a school in New York? Or, I'll make a prediction right now. The University of Texas is going to be a powerhouse soon.
Sure.
Because they could just, you got boosters upon boosters who are going, give them all the cash.
Well, and then you also have a problem with how long can you keep a legacy of you should just go there to go there, right? We've seen a number of programs rise up where they become the hot team. I've said this a few times. When I was in school, I felt like all of my friends wanted to go to UNLV.
Yeah.
Right? They were the hottest basketball team in the country. We were from a small middle of nowhere town in New Hampshire, and I had like five of my friends wanting to go to UNLV to be part of what Jerry Tarkanian was putting together, just to be able to go to those games and be part of that crowd. Right? They were the hottest team. Everybody was wearing their gear. Programs rise and fall. Duke has an outstanding academic institution. You're going to get if you stay there, you're going to get a degree from one of the best colleges in the country. But what does that matter anymore in a world of changing and fluxing economics, right? We talked about this in college football. If you are Nebraska and you are, if you're fighting for a five-star recruit at Nebraska, and he's got options to go to a place that can get him a movie studio job or a movie gig, right? Or television. Like, how do you compete with LA? How do you compete with Dallas? How do you compete with cities when you're in Nebraska? You can go on legacy. You can say, we're Nebraska. Look at us. But as things rise and fall, Nebraska's on the bottom end of that, right? Duke, like Mike Krzyzewski had them in the Final Four. And yet people would be, look at all these other programs that are around now. Look, that may not be good enough. Me getting to a Final Four with you may not be good enough anymore. I'm looking for something else. I'm looking for something extra. And I wonder if Krzyzewski went, no, I don't want to do it. I can't speak for him. It was just a speculation. But isn't it interesting that Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski, and Jay Wright all got out of this business right around the same time? And Jim Boeheim is hanging on, and people are wondering when he's going to call it quits? I mean, he's in his 70s, for crying out loud.
Is he? I mean, have his sons graduated?
Yeah. I know. Is it all done now? Is every Boeheim through the system?
I mean, that's literally the only thing I can think of is making sure his sons are getting a free ride someplace.
Yeah, exactly. And
Does he have a grandkid coming up soon?
Rick Pitino is quoted as he's at Iona. And they asked him, did he ever leave Iona? He would say it would take a special circumstance. Now, at first you might go, oh, that's just bluster. He's just supporting the people that are signing his checks, right? Nobody ever wants to admit they'd be happier somewhere else. But at the same time, it's almost like, well, how much of the big time stuff do you deal with at Iona? Probably none, right? You're not after the same kids John Calipari's after. You're not after the same kids that, you know, John Shire at Duke is after, or any other head coach in this game is after. You're at Iona. So there's a level of player that you'll go after that you don't have to worry about whether or not you can get a kid a Ferrari.
No, exactly. Right? And for him at Iona, making the tournament is probably the championship.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then maybe we get a good run in the tournament. You never know. The ball bounces a certain way. But he's probably not going into there saying, yeah, you know what? We have to win a national title this
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. So it's almost believable. Like I don't know how much I believe it, because maybe he still is like, you know, I coached at Rupp Arena. I coached at Louisville. These are two big-time college places. I know what it's like to walk into an arena with 20,000 people on the edge of their seat because tonight's special. I'm not getting that as much at Iona. I'm not getting that anymore. It's a drug. I can imagine it's a drug where you want to get it. But at the same time, maybe he's off that drug. Maybe he looks and says, you know what? These are headaches, man. I don't want to deal with. Because you know what? It was something I was always worried about. I remember talking about this when Kentucky lost to St. Peter's. And I said, look, this happens enough in the college tournament. Not so much a 15 versus a 2. That's kind of rare. But, you know, a 3 seed will lose, a 4 seed will lose in the opening round. We've only seen one 1 seed lose in the opening round. But a lot of times you go, ah, that stinks. And the fan base is angry and they're mad. But when you have real people with real money behind what you just did, then the pressure is different. Right? When no one is allowed to give your kids a nickel, they're not going to be exposed because they're not going to take the program down, and they can keep their mouth shut when they don't live up to expectations, right? So you're a coach of five starters. They're all got NIL deals because the local Lexington people are, yay, we love this team, and we got these players to come here. If they're doing it illegally by the NCAA rules, nobody's going to take the program down. So you go, yeah, whatever. But publicly, they have every right to go, wait, John, I just paid $100,000 for that kid to play here. And we could have lost to St. Peter's with my kid's JV team. Now you're getting pressure from a different place. You have to really answer to boosters that are saying, I put an economic payment into this.
I have a sweet 16 sale that was coming up.
Yeah, exactly. I have a direct financial tie to this program that's now public. Not behind the scenes where everyone's going to keep their mouth shut. I publicly gave that kid a Porsche. And you turned it into a first-round exit? I would think if you are one of these old guys that have had success, had championships on top of your game, you're not going to listen to Bob Jones Chevrolet yell at you for losing a second-round NCAA tournament game. You're above all that. I don't think you'd ever want to go back to that mess.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Ooh, 1985. I guess we are going to have some hits and misses. Nice. Who did this one again?
REO Speedwagon.
I get them confused with a couple of others. Air
of course.
Supply. People want to throw Sticks in there, but I don't know if I would put Sticks.
Nah, I could never hear Sticks.
Kind of
I mean, I'd get, you know, I could
Sticks
hear,
is different.
I'd say Foreigner, Boston.
Foreigner, Boston. Yeah, but Boston had all those love songs, too. They were all vegetarians, too. I remember reading that.
And were they really?
Remember when you used to get the cassette or the album? Mostly cassettes, and they would have that insert, and sometimes it would just be a simple paper insert, but then sometimes it would have all the lyrics and notes.
Yes, yep.
I remember I had the Boston cassette, and I remember reading in there that they were vegetarians. I don't know why that stuck with me, but every time I hear a Boston...
Probably the first time you ever knew somebody was a vegetarian.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like,
what
Brad Delp is a vegetarian. That's pretty wild.
It's great. I still love getting my favorite.
This
I don't know
is,
why.
You know this dance right here, those arms extended out.
Yeah, that's
on,
right.
On the hips.
Exactly.
And you're just rocking back and forth.
Back and
clumsily.
Forth. Clumsily. That's right. Exactly. Oh, goodness. Youth. Yeah. Crazy. I remember getting, I used to love getting 12 cassettes for a penny. Remember those days? Columbia House and
of course.
Those, how great were those? So, or then it became CDs, obviously, but that's basically how you built your collection. You got your little Columbia House insert. You pick all yeah. the ones you wanted.
And now I pay a monthly fee.
Yeah.
And I have every song that was ever created.
I know. Isn't it wild? The joys of going to the record store are back in a way, like old people who want the vinyl, you know, yeah. they just like they love yep. going back and getting it. But the young generation has no idea what it's like to go to a record store.
And just think about this, too.
Bunch of records.
You had no problems whatsoever putting on a set of headphones in a music store, hitting the button and listening. You know, somebody else had just put those headphones on.
Sweaty head. Yeah. Put the headphones on.
Some guy who had been sitting there for maybe a half hour to an hour listening to the entire album before not buying it.
In my studio, I wipe down my own headphones, and I'm the only one that uses them every now and then because I'm gross. I can't imagine throwing on headphones. That Bill just slapped on while you listen to Def Leppard.
I mean, what else? I mean, you just went to the music store and just did that.
Yeah. Exactly.
All the time.
Exactly. Used to take, like, I taught my kids this one time. This is how much of an old man I get sometimes with them. I said to them, do you guys ever listen to an entire album? Like, they still make them. They still
yep.
have albums, but you just get the songs. And my daughter was like, no.
See, that's...
No. I go, you don't listen like the B song or the, you know, the ones that aren't going to be hits. No. Not at all.
For me, that's... I don't quite understand how musicians make money now.
I don't either. I don't either. What a crazy, awful business.
Because now... You know, like back in the days, like, you know, if that song that you really liked didn't come out on a single cassette tape, you know, because I used to buy those all the time, just
all the time,
singles,
yeah.
you know, and I, you know, the B song, maybe sometimes it was good, but most of the time it wasn't. You had to buy the album.
You had to buy the album, yeah.
And you had to buy the entire album. And nowadays it's like you don't have, you can just buy that one song. That when one song's available.
When I was in college, summer of 1992, I want to think, because I'm trying to remember where I lived. I listened to Pearl Jam 10 over and over yeah. and over again. I mean, that was put side one, flip it to side two in my car. All I would drive to Boston. That's all I listened to was Pearl Jam 10 over and over again. The whole summer. That's the only thing that was playing in my car. That was it. And I'm like, even songs that were great, obviously, that were the hits, but the other ones that weren't hits, and they had a lot of hits on that album. But man, it's incredible. Like now it's just only songs I want. And I don't care if you've wrote five ones that aren't a hit. I'm only listening to this or this. That's it. And you're right, man. It is. It's fun for us when we go on like family trips. My daughter will sit in the front seat sometimes. My wife will take a nap and she'll just go, whatever you want to listen to, Dad, any song you want. And I'll be like, Holly Holy by Neil Diamond. Boom. It's on my radio. She just punches it in. Done. I'm like, let's see. Whatever group I can think of. Beastie Boys, Girls. There it is. Like anything. It's crazy. It's like when we were younger, you imagine that would be the world of the Jetsons, right? Like that would be something that would be like in the year 2416. That's when you could get all of the songs at any time you want, any of the movies anytime you want. Not in our lifetime. That's silly. That's never going to happen. But maybe my great-grandchildren would have a time where they could access any song that they wanted on a device. And in a blink of an eye, we had it. Blink of an eye, we had it. Philip on Twitter, I'm pretty sure I still owe Columbia. Oh, yeah, this is absolutely true. I'm pretty sure I still owe Columbia House an untold fortune for those 10 CDs. We probably all do.
Yeah.
That, Philip, great point. Great point. That's how I built my music collection.
Yeah, I remember.
That's exactly. I don't remember ever filling out my obligation to Columbia House. I think they just coming.
Was there a moment where they all just sat around like, guys, you know, shipping these CDs?
Yeah.
is, you know, we're losing money hand over fist right now.
These kids don't have any money to buy regularly overpriced CDs. Like, we're sending them out and we're getting back, don't want it, don't want it, don't want, like, they had to have done some sort of market survey to realize most of the people were probably under 18 and didn't really have a job.
I remember
maybe
I had
a part-time job washing dishes.
I had a friend. He and his sister used to run a scam with these things. And I, you know, years have gone on. But what they used to do was they would order 10 CDs for a penny or whatever it was, right? I think at the time it became like 10 CDs for a dollar. They would do that, wait a couple of weeks after they had already received them, and said, hey, we ordered these and never received them.
Oh, my goodness.
And then they would get a whole set of 10 shipped to them again.
Wow.
You know, and that was just before, you know, just before the era of like, oh, no, we're tracking packages now.
Yeah, right.
Like, it was just right before that.
Smart. Smart. Scam, but smart.
Yeah.
But does anybody, I would love to, I'll admit this. I have zero idea the business model for Columbia House. Zero idea how they got these
how
records,
they made money.
How they made money, how they could give 10 away for a penny. Like, it, maybe it was a warehouse where the record companies just went, here, we got a bunch of these we don't need anymore. I have no idea. I have no idea. Like, that, my best business brain, that's the only thing I could figure out, is that they just got them so incredibly cheap, almost for free, because record companies were like, here, we don't want this anymore. It's like the E.T. video game. We made too much of Kiss Dynasty. Here you go. Take them all. That's the only way my brain could wrap around their business model, because like Philip, there were millions of people across the country that probably did not fulfill their obligation.
Oh, easily.
Right? Just
easily.
Just stopped. And there were no collections. Nobody ever. You couldn't collect because you didn't owe them anything,
yeah,
right? Like you had to buy records. You didn't owe them. You just had to buy. Some people just stopped. They would just send the card and the thing, and you go, no.
And
you
I remember
kept,
hearing
you kept sending
jokes.
It back, no.
I remember hearing jokes that it's like, you know, like, oh, man, my credit's in the dumps because of Columbia House. But I don't even think they reported a credit agency.
I don't either. I don't – because what – you don't really – again, like, you didn't – there wasn't a financial agreement. You had to buy six at the regular price, but the regular price wasn't a standard $25.
No, it was
right?
Whatever,
like,
they,
the standard price could be
18, wanted.
It could be 21, it could be 26. So you owed them six. You owed them six purchases, but it's not like they could come back and say, "Well, you owe us the six purchases. You owe us $250."
Yeah,
like you could be like,
but even then,
what exactly
then,
do
you're
I
talking
mean?
About? Like, you know, if you got $250 for one person, how are you making money?
Yeah. Right.
Like, how is that?
What a crazy thing.
You've now given up, let's do the math, right? You've given up, say, 18 CDs total, okay?
Yeah.
18 CDs total for under $300.
Yeah.
At that, at that time when, you know, going to, you know, a Tower Records or a warehouse, Sam Goody, if you're cruising the mall.
Yeah. How much was $300 in 1985 today? $17,000?
Probably, yeah.
Probably. But no, seriously, like, you tell these stories to young people, they must have thought we were all nuts. They were like, wait a minute, hold on one second. You taped a penny to a piece of paper. You sent it, and in return they sent you 10 CDs? Yes. And you had to what? Well, you had to buy six at the regular price, and if they sent you a thing, they would say, here's the special, and if you didn't like it, just checked off no, and you sent it back. And yeah, you could just do that forever? Yeah, until the company went out of business or people just forgot about it.
You know, well, I mean, you had a certain time frame you had to buy those in, right?
Yeah. They're like, did you have a long legal document that you had to read and sign? No. You didn't have to scroll through 15 pages of legalese and hit accept?
My favorite, too, is that, you know, you had to buy six of those CDs at regular price. But you had like 3 years to do it.
Yeah, like, you had like three years to do it.
I was going to buy music anyways.
Yeah. When I finally get a job, I'll buy your five. The five that are left on my list. It's so funny. All right, it's Wake Up Call.